From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for January 11th, 2019. Seth Meyers of Saturday Night Live and Late Night with Seth Meyers is at the Pabst Theater, appropriately enough, Saturday night. The Bucks are back home Tuesday night with the Miami Heat, and also on Saturday at Anodyne Coffee in the Third Ward is Reverend Raven and the Chainsmokin' Altar Boys. I only mention them because what a great name for a band. All right, let's meet man's newest and best friend. A Japanese company unveiled a smart refrigerator. It's designed to keep track of how many beers you drink. Kind of sounds Big Brother-ish, but the upside is it will automatically order more beer when you run low. Ain't technology great? And after just one date, an Arizona woman was accused of stalking the man she met on a dating website. After the one date, she sent him more than 160,000 text messages over the 10-month period. And if you're playing along at home, that's roughly 530 texts a day. She says it was all in good fun. Yeah, I'll bet it was. I don't think I have to mention this, but there was no second date. In the studio, we have Brian Kilb, Art Rothschild, Mike Helzel, Joel Dreesang, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. And yes, it was a pretty good week. NASDAQ up 233 points, up 3.5% this week to close this afternoon at 6971. S&P 500 up 2.5% this week, rising 64 points to close at 2596. Dow Jones Industrial Average added 562 points this week, rising 2.4%. We close at the bell this afternoon in New York, with the Dow finishing the week at 23,996. What a difference 10 days makes. Broader markets are up 3.6% for the year now. Pretty good rebound. Best 10-day performance for stocks in almost 10 years. You know, Brian, an old expression on the street, as January goes, so goes the year. Let's hope that's true this time around.
Yeah, isn't it so usual, though, that, you know, you have a worse than most December's December, and then you come back with a really good start to the year. You know, we've talked, I think, for quite a while on this show about a lot of background noise and really paying attention to the fundamentals and the idea that perhaps there's enough good news on there out there that we'd keep a floor on this thing. And January, at least at the start, starting to prove that as we rallied into the new year. And, you know, we got a bunch of things down the road here to pay attention to, some, you know, decent anecdotal evidence anyway, that maybe they'll figure something out in China, and maybe we'll get through this government shutdown, and with a little bit of luck, maybe we continue this rally in the weeks ahead.
You know, when you look at the trade disputes, clearly a solvable problem, as you know, Brian. The U.S. has the Chinese over the barrel because it's impossible to create another reserve currency. The Chinese have us over a barrel because we're addicted to their surpluses to fund our deficits. And common sense says when you have those kinds of strong mutual interests, there's a limit to how many rocks you're going to chuck at each other, and you're going to ultimately reach across the table and try to figure out how to save face and move on. So I'm hopeful that they're going to resolve some of these trade disputes. Just the fact that they started the talks again, you know, were enough to send the markets 256 points higher on Tuesday, with the rally spilling into Wednesday and Thursday. So we saw a nice relief, and I think it's indicative of what's going to happen down the road when they decide to call off the trade dispute and settle the grievances and try to move on. You know, the other significant difference is that, you know, nobody thinks the Fed is going to raise 3-4 times this year. That Jay Powell's gone out of his way to say that they're going to pause now, they're data dependent as they've been. But, you know, they've made it quite clear that they're not hell-bent on raising rates 3-4 times. And I think that's helping stocks. The futures market, 40% chance that they could lower rates by the end of the year. Nobody saw that coming. So I think that we're getting towards the end of rate tightening. you're reading more about bond managers looking at lengthening the durations of their bond portfolios. I read a report in the Wall Street Journal where they're quoting a guy from Goldman saying that the 10-year treasury may have peaked. That's pretty interesting, you know, considering the 10-year is down now a little bit from 3%. So not only do we see the likelihood of some type of relief on the trade front, but we're also looking at a point maybe later this year where the Fed is going to be done for now in raising rates.
You know, Bob, I'm just fascinated by the whole concept of quantitative tightening. And, you know, whoever went through a period of time with the monetary policy of the last 8 or 9 years in quantitative easing, now we get to see the other end of it. And we've never done it before, so we don't know what to expect. But to your point, if the Fed's done and short-term rates are somewhere near a quarter point or even half a point, near where they're going to end, then you start to look at the rest of the world and you start to see some of these, you know, some of these activities in terms of not buying bonds and then ultimately raising rates. If we can get back on the same page globally, the dollar settles, things start to return to normal, that can do nothing but help everybody along this path and get us back to a normal place. Then we start talking about corporate earnings again and some of the other things that I think will drive the markets in the long run.
Art, jump in here. What's your take on current events?
Well, currently, again, a rally going on for 3 weeks now is a very good thing. I want to caution investors not to react when they receive their statements and see that they lost money in December. I've received a number of calls, and to that I have to suggest that it's pretty tough to make money when everything's going down. The S&P lost 9% in December alone, so don't be surprised if you lost money in December. But I would encourage most of our clients and listeners to look back at the year last year as a done, you know, it's a game over. The S&P lost 4.5% last year. That's your benchmark. If you did slightly worse than that or slightly better than that, you had a good year. But even more interesting, looking at what's happened, as you guys have suggested, year to date in the first 10 days of the year, the market's up, as you suggested, 3.6% on the S&P. People have made back more than half of what they would have lost over the course of last year. And if we achieve what you guys have suggested, maybe some stability from the Fed is suggesting stability in interest rates. If we get some positive news with respect to China, we could be pleasantly surprised with how well stocks do. And if corporate profits, as you suggest, are coming in next week positive, it could be a good thing. But one cautionary note, economists are forecasting a recession. Potentially out by about 2020. When you hear the word recession, you shouldn't run for cover, but you should be cognizant of the fact that it can, you know, just worries about that can cause more volatility. Make sure you have the right balance.
Art, I was talking to clients just an hour ago about recessions, and I tried to explain the math, because some people tend to overreact. When you think of GDP for this year, give or take, I think it's going to be about 2%. So the technical definition of a recession, as you know, is two consecutive quarters of negative GDP. And the point I'm trying to make is, you know, it's not like the bottom falls out. GDP may go down and contract 1.5%. Now, you compare that to 2% growth, you're only talking about a 3% swing in the economy. It's not a huge number. So you want to keep that in mind. You also need to remember, I think folks need to remember, that it's a different market now. I mean, we've seen a substantial decrease in the forward PE. The most people are used to a price correction. Stock prices go down 25%. But we saw a valuation correction of 25% from a year ago. Forward PEs were a little over 19. They ended the year below 15, you know, the way I do math, that's almost a 25% correction in valuation. And whether you get there by a price decline or you get there because of the forward multiples compressed, the end is still the same. So we have this market that is reflecting a slowdown in growth, but the wheels don't fall off the cart. Again, think of my example with 2% GDP for this year, and maybe GDP shrinks next year 1.5%. You know, it's not like it's a 20% swing in GDP growth. It's, you know, in the lower single digits. And the economy is very different than the stock market, and the market is, I think, indicating that a slowdown is coming. And, you know, this is the first time in a decade that I've read soft landing, where they're dragging that out again. And 56% of the economists surveyed in the Wall Street Journal poll that they just published forecasting a downturn next year. And the markets are really good at predicting in advance, 6 to 9 months. So the slowdown that we saw in stock prices, the decline in stock prices from last September, you know, could in fact be right on the money, saying that the economy is going to slow down later this year, we'll have a mild recession next year, and then start climbing out of it. But the point is, let's assume that the recession's over by early 2021. So, you know, back that off 9 months, which in English means that, you know, we'll get a pretty good recovery in the market either late this year or sometime the year after. So they don't drag on forever. And I'm actually fairly upbeat, mostly because the problems that have been, you know, hovering over the markets, higher interest rates, trade disputes, are solvable issues. They're not intractable problems that are impossible to work around. That, along with reasonable valuations, you know, gives me some optimism. Mike, let's bring you into the program. What's your take on current events?
Well, one of the things that I've been getting asked a lot about by clients is the government shutdown. It seems you guys have mentioned the trade disputes, and it seems we're kind of getting some better news on that. But then obviously the government shutdown is on a lot of people's minds. And I tell them one of the things you've always said, Bob, is in situations like these is to stay in the game and stay balanced. So that's why I've been telling clients about it. But one of the things I find interesting is I actually have a client who is part of the government shutdown. She works in D.C. and she's furloughed. And so she's kind of giving me an inside look of what's going on in D.C. And I kind of relay that to my clients. I mean, we say businesses stay open during the shutdown. And while that's true, I can sense that there could be some slowing down if this doesn't get resolved soon. I mean, she's telling me about how the lines are less at, you know, the food trucks and the movie theaters, and there's barely anyone really shopping a lot of Trader Joe's, which if that was around here would make my wife very happy, make her shopping experience easier. But she's kind of painting a picture of if this doesn't end soon, there could be some serious problems with the overall economy, to the point where I believe the numbers came out today, a study was done that if this doesn't end soon, we could lose $13 billion a month into the economy. And so I don't want to paint like such a negative picture about it to my clients, but I just want them, you know, they bring it up to me and I want them to be aware that we're looking at it. But then I just, again, go back to stay in the game, stay balanced, but it's something that we're keeping an eye on here.
You know, Mike, as your point's well taken, the most important issue for investors when you're dealing with declining stock prices is to stay focused on really what matters, which is stay invested. The longer term, nothing makes more than stocks. There's not a lot of risk that stocks are going to be worth less 10 years from now. And who knows what they're going to be worth a year from now or 6 months or 6 weeks from now. So the risk isn't the longer term. The risk is the shorter term. And to remember that, you know, the average from the peak to the trough back to the prior peak is only 23 months. Blink of an eye, that's basically over. So when you look at, you know, how long the average sell-off lasts, how quickly they recover, you know, it's easy to get a little bit afraid on the way down. But just before you know it, I've been at this so long, just before you know it, stocks start to recover. And it's interesting, in my opinion, to see, as I mentioned, that so often stocks start recovering before the economic data gets good. You know, Warren Buffett is famous for saying that if you want the luxury of certainty, you're going to overpay for stocks, that the rewards go to those that are brave enough to just hang in there at a time when, you know, we are looking at a slowdown, at a time when I don't think it's a matter of if. We know that the effects of the tax cuts start wearing off, and the way I've read it, that's the leading reason for the slowdown, that the waning effects of the tax cuts won't get offset by other factors, and as a result, we'll probably have a mild downturn. So you're right, Mike. It's so important to stay in the game and stay focused on what matters. Hey, Joel, let's bring you into the program here. We had some pretty interesting economic news this week.
We did, Bob. About the shutdown, I mean, we're not seeing as much economic news as we would otherwise because the Commerce Department is one of the agencies that's shut down, and they provide a lot of numbers. But we had the Labor Department is still funded, so we're getting numbers from them. And, you know, that's still looking pretty good. You know, we're still seeing signs from unemployment claims and from job openings that that it's a tight labor market. And that's good news for the economy because wages are going up. We saw from the Labor Department report last week that for the third month in a row that year-to-year wage gains were 3%, and that hasn't happened since before, you know, the last recession. So that's good because if people have wages, they're going to be spending, and we know that consumer spending, you know, drives 70% of the economy.
Joel, I noticed that mortgage rates are now at the lowest level in 8 months. 30-year fixed now at 4.5%, down from over 5% last fall. That's got to help housing at some point in time.
Yeah, Bob, housing is one of the areas where we've been seeing a slowdown. And again, you know, slowdown doesn't mean a downturn. It's just been, you know, not growing as fast as it had been. And that's one area where affordability was getting to be in question. And as we keep the rates down, there were a lot of people, there were constraints on supply for a long time in housing. And so people were thinking, you know, I'd like to buy a house, but I can't find the one I'm looking for. But if the mortgage rates are helping make it affordable, they're going to be looking harder, and they're going to be more apt to get off the fence and get a house.
Thank you, Joel. Brian, pretty hard to ignore the performance of growth stocks this year and international. You know, the international got hit pretty good last year. Pretty encouraging to see that coming back. Growth stocks led the market up till September, and then healthcare and utilities took the lead, only two profitable sectors for last year. And now it's back to 2017 all over again with growth stocks and you know, principally the tech stocks and international leading the hit parade.
Bob, I'm especially dialed into the international concept at this time. You know, if you think about last year, you know, everybody got rocked pretty good in January and February, and then U.S. markets came back for a host of reasons, but foreign markets never did. So you continue to see their performance. So what do you get now? You get, you know, kind of the slowdown globally, but you also get, relatively speaking, far cheaper stocks overseas. So to your point earlier about, you know, is there a recession out there? Are we closer to it? Maybe we're already in the middle of some kind of slowdown. If monetary policy globally starts to sink, and if the economy starts to resync, which they kind of sort of have in December and January so far, you know, the value you see overseas is pretty compelling and might be a great opportunity in the months ahead. Something else we haven't talked about, which I'm a little reluctant to talk about the small caps because there's a big roller coaster ride, but it's a little cheaper in the small caps these days. And like non-U.S. earnings, which are supposed to grow 16%, that's what they expect in the small caps this year. So cheaper small caps, maybe better earnings potential, relatively speaking, for a period of time. You know, in both cases, you got to be pretty careful, Bob, because they present their own kind of unique additional risks. But you know, the problems we had in the last quarter of last year certainly have created some opportunities.
Mike, as you know, we had a bond manager here at the firm Wednesday with about 30 of us around the board table. He pretty much reinforced our views from last summer that the low end of investment grade BBB was going to get roughed up. So we have been moving away from BBB, increasing the credit quality. You know, I didn't rely upon his advice, but it was reassuring to see that, you know, he's basically saying the same thing to folks, that so much issuance in the corporate bond market has gone to BBB. It's now half of the investment grade bond market, way different from the old days. So the message that I heard loud and clear from this gentleman on Wednesday was stick to quality in the bond market.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought he was very interesting in terms of how, when you look at kind of how bond quality is broken down, there's that line between triple B and everything below. And he actually said his firm drew the line of A and below, where triple B was almost kind of considered with the junk quality. I thought that was very interesting, and I liked his take on it, which is something we've been saying, like you said, for months now, about how we've been improving clients' credit quality to help them while rates were rising, and also with just the amount of money going into triple B, it doesn't hurt to raise your credit quality to get out a little early.
Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for joining the program, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.